Welcome to the podcast. My name is Father Bill W. I'm an Episcopal priest here in Austin, Texas. And every once in a while, we do, we're calling it a bonus episode, just kind of touching on some things that might be of interest to people. And I've got a series that's coming up in a few weeks, and it's going to be on the subject Viktor Frankl. And Frankl really saved my butt my first year in recovery. He wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. Frankl was in a concentration camp in Germany. He was a psychiatrist, a pretty eminent psychiatrist in Vienna. This book was all about helping somebody find meaning and purpose in their life when all around you, it looks like there is none. And that was pretty much the way I felt my first year in recovery. And that book really helped pull me through. Tom has done a lot of work on Viktor Frankl. He uses logotherapy is the brand of therapy that Frankl developed, and Tom uses it in his practice. So we're going to be doing a deep dive into another book by Frankl, and that one is called The Doctor and the Soul. So if you get a chance and you're listening to this a week or so before the series starts, you might go ahead and order a copy if you're not familiar with it. And so by way of background, Tom is a therapist out in Reno, Nevada, has also lectured for many, many years at the University of Nevada, and had a TV show for a long, long while out there in Reno. And I was visiting my son out there, and I appeared as a guest on his show. So this is a recording of Tom interviewing me. I hope you'll enjoy it. And then come on back. You'll have an opportunity to listen to me interviewing Tom. Enjoy. Hope all's well. God bless.
News Channel 8 presents New Skills for Living with your host, Tom Lavin.
Hello, and welcome to New Skills for Living, a show dedicated to healing and wholeness in our community. If you'd like to learn about the 12 steps and about the 12-step program of recovery, you'll want to watch our show today. We have a great guest. His name is Father Bill Wigmore. Father Wigmore is the president and chief executive officer of Austin Recovery. Bill has been a counselor and an administrator in the field of addictions recovery for over 35 years, and he's helped thousands and thousands of people, individuals and families, find recovery. Bill is a friend and colleague and mentor of mine back from the mid-70s in Detroit, Michigan. And Bill, it's great to have you here as our guest today. Thank you for coming.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be with you, Tom.
In this segment, we're going to talk about the steps of recovery. And in the next segment, we're going to talk about the fellowship. But Bill, quite frequently, those first three steps are referred to as the foundation steps. Can you talk with us a little bit about those, please?
The first step in the program is where one admits one's powerlessness over alcohol, drugs, in our case, and that our lives have become unmanageable, meaning that I can't change this thing by myself. I try to quit repeatedly, and failure is a result. Maybe I stay sober a week, a month, 3 months, but invariably I go back to it. And then what happens is in step two, I begin the connection process, to connect to a power greater than self. And this is somewhat vague in the 12-step program, but it's God as we understand God, or even better from the history, God as you don't understand God, because the truth is nobody does. St. Augustine said that pretty well, and I think he had it right. Anyone who thinks they understand God should call for help. You know, we don't. And then to begin a surrender process to that God, to begin an act whereby you say, I can't manage my life. I've tried. And the results were repeatedly failures. So I'm going to give this thing a shot. And I'm going to put myself in a position where God can begin to direct me. And so that's the basis of it. And it's really a decision. It's a use of the will. It's not a white light experience. Rarely does that happen. But an understanding that I can't stay sober, or I can't stop eating compulsively, or whatever the behavior might be.
And then, so moving then from that foundation,
yes,
frequently those next six steps, 4 through 9, are called the housekeeping steps.
Yeah, I refer to them as correction.
Correction, okay.
Making a change in me. See, I was always wonderful at taking everybody's inventory. Uh-huh. I thought it was a great gift that God had given me.
Yeah.
I could tell you what's wrong with you. With you. I stunk at saying, what's wrong with me? What's my part in this? Mm-hmm. And that's really historically where the steps began to develop, where the inventory process came in. So what's my part in it? You know, I'm pointing to you, there's three fingers coming back at me. Mm-hmm. So to look at my part, to be willing to change. Frank Bookman, for example, well, his started with a resentment. He had a resentment towards his board of directors, where they had done something wrong to him. And as he hated them, he felt God's presence missing from his life. He made that wonderful connection there. And he was able to do that then with other people, with the French and the Germans after World War II, and to have each take responsibility for their part in it. I mean, that was his gift.
So I guess, Bill, part of that is taking an inventory, and then there's a confession of sorts to another.
Yeah. Yeah, to one another, and it usually
starts. Where you kind of sit down and you admit to someone face to face, like.
Yeah, and interestingly, it's not just a confession. It's often having the confessor confess first. Having the confessor say, you know, Tom, let me tell you about me. And as I tell you about me, as I share how what anger did to me, what alcohol did to me, what drugs did to me, what infidelity did to me, as I share this with you, as you begin to see a level of honesty in me, it calls that forth from you. And that's really the beginning of the change.
So that's an important part of the housekeeping, is
yes,
the self-honesty and the ability to listen and share with,
right,
with another person.
And then to make amends for the wrongs that I've done.
Can you very quickly tell us about amends?
Yeah, that if I've done wrong to somebody, that I need to go to you and to own my part in that. And not only to clean my side of the street, but also to evoke once again from you that change in yourself.
Yeah. So Bill, would you share with us your perspective on those steps that are sometimes called the daily living steps, 10, 11, and 12?
Right. The program sort of finishes with 1 through 9, and then 10, 11, 12, maintenance steps, some people call them. I call them the connection steps. As I've done my research on the history of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Oxford Group Connection, more and more I came away convinced that that prayer and meditation piece is really at the heart of the transformation process. Even in some AA literature, some early AA literature, it spoke about, it was that morning quiet time that made the changes in people, not the attendance at meetings. They said meetings were helpful, but the quiet time was absolutely necessary to bring about the change. Well, that's almost heresy. In most 12-step programs, it's 90 meetings in 90 days. There's a do-it-by-rote kind of thing to it, which I'm kind of against. I mean, meetings are good. We encourage our patients to go to meetings. But meetings alone will not do it. What does it is that connection. And that connection is where the transformation happens. That the ego, alcoholics by and large are very ego-centered. And there's a need for humility. And the only way I think that you're going to bring that about is by kind of showing up every day with the failures of the day. And I fail every day, you know, to live the life God is asking me to live. And but he doesn't yell at me like my father did. Very, very loving, very accepting, very warm. And now we're going to do this tomorrow. And I'm going to learn from the mistakes. And I'm going to go to you with my 10th step. And I'm going to say, Tom, I hurt you yesterday. And I apologize for that. And to try to keep it clean. And then out of that comes 12, which is a spiritual awakening, which is the thing we spoke about earlier, that you find a better way to live, a more loving way to live. Some people define addiction as a love disorder, mm-hmm. and I'm with them that they're really on to something there. Mm-hmm. You know, I never let people love me, mm-hmm. and I was very guarded, and I still am. This is. I mean, it's not my nature to be in recovery. Mm-hmm. My nature is kind of goes against that, mm-hmm. and so to allow people to love me, to begin my reaching out to love them. Mm-hmm. This is what recovery's about. Mm-hmm. It's what life's about, mm-hmm. you know? And we're doing a lousy job of this in the world. Mm-hmm. So I think Frank Bookman was really onto something, mm-hmm. that if we don't really begin to find this change in ourselves and then bring it to the world, we're gonna be in for some very rough times.
Well, Bill, could you tell us a little bit more about this combination of journaling and quiet time, of meditation and journaling? I'd really like to hear more from you about that.
Okay, if you promise not to have me committed. Because I was kind of really shocked when I reached into the history. And what I found them doing is they would read some mm-hmm. spiritual literature, if they were Christians, and there were some specific things. They would read the Sermon on the Mount, 1 Corinthians 13, the love mm-hmm. chapter, and the letter of James. If they were Buddhists, because Bookman worked with them as well, read you know, the mm-hmm. literature there. Mm-hmm. And then they would do this. Quiet time began actually when they would then pick up the pencil or pen and begin to write the thoughts that came into their mind. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they would ask a question and they would receive guidance. Perhaps it's an amend that I need to make. Perhaps it's where I'm failing in loving mm-hmm. My family, in being honest at work. Mm-hmm. They had four absolutes that they talked about: honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. And in some areas of AA, particularly around the Akron and Cleveland mm-hmm. area, they still focus very, very much on those. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful way to live. The thing that we do a very bad job of in, mm-hmm. in our culture is teaching people how to live. Mm-hmm. And so what often happens in recovery, someone comes into a crisis and they're 28, 38 years old when they really begin the process. And in many cases, Tom, it's a fathering process, mm-hmm. or it's a mothering process, mm-hmm. that really happens. They're recovering from alcohol or drug abuse, and emotionally inside we're 6, 7, 12 years old, whatever mm-hmm. it may be. Mm-hmm. And we then come into contact with someone who's gonna say, "Let me teach you how to live, son."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
"Let me teach you how to deal with your feelings."
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we're teaching, particularly our young boys, how to become men. Mm-hmm. And so we stay stuck. In some more primitive cultures, they have traditions, ceremonies. For example, the men from the tribe, the elders from the tribe will come in. And in a stage setting, they will rip the young boy, 12, 13, 14, out of his mother's arms, mm-hmm. and take him into the woods. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful time. It's when alcoholism and drug addiction often start with the young people that I work with.
Yeah, 12, you know? 13 years old.
Right.
Yeah.
When did it start? And they take him into the woods and they teach them the ways of the tribe. Mm-hmm. And we don't do that. Mm-hmm. We don't do them. We leave them stuck.
Well, so often, Bill, the rite of passage in our society is to be 12 or 13 and go out and start getting loaded.
Get
a fake ID and get loaded.
Yes.
Right?
And you know what they will do in the woods is they will scar them in some way. Mm-hmm. There'll be tattoos that are going. Where's that happening now? It's happening on the streets. The young kids are joining gangs to get what we're not giving them as fathers.
Yeah, whether it's a street gang or a suburban gang, it's some kind of peer group gang rather than
yes.
someone older teaching someone to be a man.
Right.
And of course, one of the things that I would surmise happens with a healthy rite of passage is a young man has possession of himself and it's more of an internal locus of control.
Right.
And not looking out to people, places, and things or booze or drugs to feel better or feel okay about themselves or feel
right.
comfortable in their own skin.
Ready to leave childhood behind. Mm-hmm. You know, Paul said, "When I was a child, I thought like a child, I acted like a child. When I became a man, I let go of it." Well, this is how do you teach somebody to become a man mm-hmm. or how to become a woman, because mm-hmm. That's what recovery is going to be. Stop thinking about yourself. Mm-hmm. Can you go and help somebody else? Mm-hmm. You know, are you giving rather than taking? Mm-hmm. And we just do a very, very poor job of that.
Yeah.
in our culture.
So along with mentoring, which in the program maybe historically has been called sponsorship,
yes,
we've got about a minute here, Bill. Could you tell us mm-hmm. a little bit, you know, there's that saying that you alone can do it, but you don't have to do it alone, which is about the program or the fellowship yeah. of recovery. Can you tell us a little bit in about a minute about that?
Yeah, that we need connection. Mm-hmm. And it's not just connection with God, though that is important, but it's also connection with one another. Mm-hmm. That I see other people, meet other people who get to know me mm-hmm. and get to love me and get to trust me. Mm-hmm. And I then pass that on to others. I mean, that is why the fellowship is so extremely important.
Yeah. In fact, for some people who grew up maybe in an alcoholic or addictive family, mm-hmm. the fellowship in some ways becomes a family in terms of support and nurturing and encouragement and guidance. Huh?
Right. It absolutely can. Yeah.
So there's that line in the big book that says the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it.
Right.
Let's start there, Bill. What does that mean?
It means moving, for me, I think, yeah. it means moving beyond doctrine and dogma. Uh-huh. To an experience of God in one's life.
Uh-huh.
The big book also talks about we were catapulted into a fourth dimension of existence. Mm-hmm. That's mystical language, uh-huh. okay? Uh-huh. One writer talks about alcoholics and addicts as misfit mystics.
Uh-huh.
And I think they're really on to something,
uh-huh.
you know?
Yeah.
That in recovery, one needs to find an altered state of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I was looking for that, you know.
Yeah.
I started, at, you know, drinking at 13, 14 years old, you know. I'd go into a bar, I didn't know it, I'd like an altered state of consciousness, please. And they would give it to me
yeah.
in a bottle.
Yeah.
And it did that for me, uh-huh. but then it did things to me as
uh-huh.
well.
Uh-huh.
And I think a good, solid recovery introduces people to ways to find that feel better than the alcohol
mm-hmm.
and drugs.
Mm-hmm. Good, I like that. So we're going to be spending this show, Bill, looking at different spiritual themes around recovery. The first one I want to ask you about is surrender. Tell us
yeah.
about surrender.
Well, surrender has a bad reputation.
Uh-huh.
And I would say particularly amongst women
uh-huh.
Who, for whom that can be a real turnoff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use the word a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I use the word alignment.
Oh, okay.
And I watch people shift inside. Surrender, it's like I gotta, you know, give up. Well, no.
Mm-hmm.
I really have to more so align myself with.
Okay.
And if I'm doing that properly, then I'm getting in touch with the Spirit.
Uh-huh.
Now, you want to call that surrender? Yeah, you could look at it that way. But I think connection nails it a heck of a lot better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. What about acceptance? That seems to be a key word in recovery. What can you share with us about that dynamic and experience of acceptance?
You know, the old serenity prayer mm-hmm. is very big with recovering people.
Mm-hmm.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, wisdom to know the difference. There's a second part mm-hmm. to that prayer, mm-hmm. which I think is a shame that it's left out. And it says, taking this sinful world as Jesus did.
Mm-hmm.
There's pain in this world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's in the American script.
Uh-huh.
You know, it should be painless. It should not hurt.
Immediate gratification.
Yeah. I want what I want when I want it. Give it to me.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to wait 10 seconds, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's not a good way to live.
Mm-hmm.
It's not reality.
Mm-hmm.
So acceptance, it's not all about me. Acceptance of the illness is one thing, but acceptance of a red light.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I am stopped, can I be at peace with that?
Mm-hmm.
If I can't, there's something wrong,
mm-hmm.
all right?
Acceptance
of death is part of it. Acceptance, the midlife crisis,
mm-hmm.
which comes, you know, 35, 40, is this all there is? Is this, maybe that's a good example of acceptance,
mm-hmm.
but it kind of is in the sense that I can't deny the reality of age
mm-hmm.
anymore.
Mm-hmm. And as you're describing that, it doesn't seem like acceptance is really passive. It's kind of an active.
If it's done right.
Uh-huh. We've got
yes.
about a half a minute here.
Okay.
Can you tell us about that being active acceptance?
yeah, that it's exciting, that it's exciting. I think recovery is about shifting the ego from an inflated sense of self to a more properly aligned sense of self.
Bill, let me ask you about the phenomenon of hope and how important that is to someone in recovery.
I think it's one of the things that happens earliest in recovery. But you begin to see people doing what you couldn't do. And then you begin to see them as human people, flawed like you are. And that then begins to bring hope to those of us who were feeling hopeless. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I first entered recovery, I mean, that was my feeling. It was the hopelessness of my situation. Mm-hmm. And I had no hope. Mm-hmm. And it was given to me. It was given to me by people. And they just love you along in the process when you can't love yourself.
So to go from despair to hope that one can be clean and sober and have a great life, huh? Have a
right.
good life.
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of hopelessness, though.
Uh-huh. Well, tell us about that.
Well, that if you don't bring that to the table, then you're not going to be as interested, as desperate, as searching, as wanting mm-hmm. that hope. Because when we ended the last thing, we were talking about making a shift away from the self to a new home in a self greater than me. I call that God. I call that my relationship with mm-hmm. Christ, and I call it my relationship with other people too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the reality. Mm-hmm. Rather than, you know, do you believe this? Do you believe that? Do you believe this other thing? Are you living a spiritual life? Mm-hmm. Is love coming into you and coming out of you? If so, that's great. If not, why not?
Then three other concepts that you often hear from people in recovery are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. Mm. What are your thoughts about those themes in recovery, Bill?
Well, honesty is really one of the absolute basics. Addicts are liars. I lied when it was easier to tell the truth. I just wanted to stay practiced and hone my ability there. I got in trouble, and I came from a lying family where that was taught. My dad was a longshoreman in New York, and he was very ashamed of that. I was not permitted to tell people what my father did. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. and when I did, I got in trouble for it.
Yeah,
I got in trouble for telling the truth in my family. For many of us, there's a huge hole in our hearts and in our souls, and we try to fill that. And if we have to steal to fill that, if we have to lie, pretend, so honesty is key to beginning the process. Mm-hmm. Open-mindedness to not have all the answers is extremely important. The hardest three words an alcoholic or an addict says, I think, is, I don't know. Well, what freedom comes with that? Uh-huh. You know? Because I always thought I had to know.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't know. You know? And I try that on every
day. And don't have to know.
I don't have to know. You know?
Yeah.
Wow, what freedom. So to be open to that.
Mm-hmm.
Willingness is the key. To be willing to put recovery first, to be willing to do the things that recovery demands, to be willing to take on responsibilities, mm-hmm. To grow up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes somebody will call me on the phone and they're telling me that, you know, they're trying this with their son and they've taken his car keys away and they've done this to him. How old is the boy? And they'll say, well, he's 48. And it's, we got to grow up.
Bill, as an Episcopal priest, you do a service called the Fellowship of the Prodigal, which makes me think about another theme in recovery, and that's forgiveness. So can you share with us the importance of that theme in recovery, please?
It's tremendously important. One of the toughest things I think alcoholics and addicts have to do is, one, is to forgive themselves. And that's probably the last one that happens. To forgive their family, because nobody got the love that each one of us deserves.
Mm-hmm.
We don't teach people how to father well, how to mother well. We don't support young people in doing that. So all of us get scarred mm-hmm. In that. And forgiveness is key to a spiritual life. Mm-hmm. So and it goes both ways, forgiving myself and forgiving others.
And it's really kind of a letting go thing in that I'm no longer a victim. I'm an active creator of my life now as an adult man or woman. Is that the way you see it? Or
Yeah. And people get stuck at that, won't let go of this.
And of course, the opposite of that, the resentment that you were alluding to, I think it's in the big book where it says resentment shuts out the sunlight of the spirit.
Right.
Kind of like what you were talking about with Frank Buckman.
Exactly.
At one time too.
Yeah.
And of course.
And he got the equation. To the degree that I'm cut off from them, I'm cut off from God. Well, that's good theology. Which we don't teach very much. You know, we teach it's okay to hate. It's okay to wage wars and kill people and
or payback or vengeance or
absolutely.
And the forgiveness is a weakness rather than a strength sometimes. Of course, the other part of that then, Bill, is the spiritual concept of making amends to people we have harmed. Can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Well, I had to. I was raised in an alcoholic home. I was beaten and abused and all of that good stuff. When I got into recovery, they talked to me about making amends to my father. I said, wait a minute. I'm waiting for the phone to ring for him to make amends to me. And they said, no, you've got to make amends to him. For what? For your part in that. Well, what was my part in that? You know what my part was? As a young boy, I said inside one day, you will never hurt me again. And I built a wall of protection around myself.
And you shut your dad out. Huh?
I shut him out.
Yeah.
And I needed to do that. I mean, I think, as you know, defense mechanisms are there for a reason. But when you defend too much, when you defend against that, I kept everybody else out too. And so I had to go and say to him, Dad, I love you. Because I did. I did. And it was sad that he could not love me back. But, you know, as I looked in my family history, I mean, his father didn't teach him how to father. And it goes back several generations. You know, where the scripture says, you know, the sin will be passed on for. That's what they're talking about. If we don't learn how to do this thing, what we don't transcend, you know, we transmit.
Good. I like that, Bill. So, of course, another theme that we hear in recovery is the theme of gratitude. And can you share your thoughts with about gratitude with us?
Gratitude is very hard for the ego. See, the ego, particularly if you're type A, is look what I did, look what I did. And really, it's a gift. Sobriety is a gift. Life is a gift. But we don't come with we come, I came, take my own inventory, I didn't ask to be here. I came with a chip on my shoulder, you know? Look what you've done to me, God, family, whomever. Gratitude was not natural to me. And so I have to really, really work on that, that each day is a gift, my sobriety is a gift, life is a gift. This next breath that I'm going to take is a gift, and treat it as such, and thank the giver. You know, and we call that God, call that life, call that spirit, but get in touch with that, and then life really changes.
Okay, so Bill, here's another one. We have about 30 seconds, and this theme of self-transcendence, of non-self-centeredness, but being transcending oneself. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Love, it says in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, love and service are our code. The transcendence, Bill Wilson had a spiritual awakening. It was a hot flash, white light experience. Very uncommon. And it may have been the drugs that he was taking that brought that about. But what does happen, what I do see over and over with the patients that we work with, is coming to life again.
Okay.
And it's a shift that happens inside.
Bill, I'm just wondering, you know, in this last 30 seconds, if someone out there is a person suffering with problems with alcohol or drugs or another compulsive disorder, or they're a family member and they're in despair. What would you say to them right now, just in about a half a minute?
I would say that, you know, help is there, help is possible, but it's sometimes hard to find. 12-step groups exist for many, many problems, and it's a way to transform people, but you've got to avail yourself of it. There really is no magic. You know, recovery is hard work. Recovering from anything, changing is hard.
But it's
there.
Just be willing to do that work. Okay.
Right.
Well, it's been great to have Father Bill Wigmore here to share his wisdom and experience, strength, and hope with us. We thank you for joining us. Hope that you found this to be helpful for yourself, this theme of addiction and recovery. Take good care of yourself.